This is Orbital Nonsense,
a podcast about space magic.
I'm Lily, a witch and an astrologer.
And I'm Veda. I'm just here to ask stupid questions.
Hi. Welcome to another episode of This Orbital Nonsense. How are we? Are we doing good?
We're doing okay. We're living with chronic illness and capitalism and general bullshittery. How about you?
Valid. Same, basically. Yeah. Do you wanna dive right in? Do you have questions for me?
I do have questions for you. So it's kind of funny because the conversation that we were having before recording was about so I've had stuff change for me that I'm in limbo with. And so because I'm in limbo and frustrated about that, then that with my neurodivergence and my chronic illness and everything has thrown me out of whatever. So we just had a conversation about not feeling bad about being non-productive. Uh-huh. And I just realized that my first question is kind of a productivity one.
Okay. Irony.
Right. I did, to be fair, think of this question 2 weeks ago. So I still believe that I shouldn't be feeling lazy because my body won't do the thing. No. But just to put that out there.
Yeah.
So, okay. So this question is about, so again, this is going to be hyper specific to my chart, but my hope is that it can show people also things or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is usually my thought about this, but so one of the things about me is that I love starting to learn a language, right? And so I'm I'm definitely gonna become, and every time I'm I'm gonna learn this all the way. I'm gonna be fluent in it, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So I know a decent amount of Spanish. I've gone the farthest in French, but I've also started and stopped learning Arabic. I've started and stopped learning Turkish. Not most recently, I've gone I should learn some German. And then most recently I was hey, do you remember when I used to so I lived in China for a while. So I used to be able to read and write 50 characters. I didn't keep up with that. So I don't remember that. And a handful of phrases. But Chinese, Mandarin Chinese, anything that's based in that kind of writing style is actually if you're artistically brained, is it obviously doesn't make you speak the language well, but
sure.
You know, so I've always kind of thought I could probably learn to read and write that. So I've kind of floated back into that space, but still keeping up with German and still watching a bunch of stuff in French. I'm terrible at all of these languages, right? And also, this is not an exhaustive list. There's
sure
more. Yeah. So I mean, in another life, I would love to be. I mean, in this life, I would love to be a polyglot. My sister's a polyglot. My I think she speaks 13 or something, some of whatever. My cousin speaks 14 languages fluently. I just would love that. Mm-hmm. So my question is, so I'm pretty sure that you can look at my chart and be this is what makes you want to do it, right? I'm pretty I'd be shocked if you couldn't look at my chart and see that. But I wonder, if you can look at my chart and see what holds me back from it, I mean, my neurodivergence probably holds me back from it.
But I was going to say, first of all, your ADHD is what does that.
Yes. I mean, I am aware of that or whatever, but I wonder if you could like look at my chart and be like, I think if you did this and this, that it would like help, you know, counterbalance like whatever is showing up in my chart. Mm-hmm. Which a lot of which I'm sure are just like ADHD and like whatever. So yeah, so that's basically it. And I kind of have some ideas of like what you'll probably look at, but I also tried to see, I didn't realize you.
keep talking. I'm just gonna.
Do you think my ADHD like throws me off course? I just like look down for a second. You're sharing your screen, and in my brain, I'm like,
possible.
What has happened? There's probably more deities that may or may not have asteroids that come up, but I did a perfunctory thing, and one of the things that came up is. Minerva, which I think is a romanization of a So anyways, just now to the person that actually knows things about astrology.
Two things I'm immediately seeing, and anyone that is watching the video version of this and knows anything about astrology will probably immediately see at least one of those. You have Mercury, the planet of communication, languages, obviously, right. In your sixth house.
Okay.
So the sixth house is the house of daily routines, boring daily stuff. The things we do either every day or every week or every month on any kind of regular basis. That is, you know, your everyday job. Doesn't sure. have to be your actual career or your dream job. It's the boring stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff that you do to get by, right? It's house chores. It's homework for students. It's, any of these kinds of things. So yeah. It is not surprising that you would, on a routinely basis, pull in new languages to study with Mercury in your sixth house. And also, it's in Pisces. So,
yeah,
Pisces adds a little bit of this, like, all over the place, dreamy kind of energy. Pisces is, yeah, not very good at sticking two things. Pisces feels very, very, very ADHD, but also autistic energy.
Yeah. But also, like, this is probably Pisces' fault as well. Uh-huh. But, like, also, every time I start one, I'm like, because I'm very interested in, like, cultures and travel and, like, whatever. So every time I start a new language, I'm like, this is really going to help me understand this culture, and I'm going to like watch their films and like read their books and like mm-hmm. whatever. And I feel like I'm going to have this like deep cultural connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is
this time I'm going to,
that is very Pisces. But also,
yeah,
Mercury has this opposition with Saturn, and we've talked about that before. I'm not sure if we did so on the podcast, but us two have certainly talked about that, where it comes to like the neurological stuff that you have with your chronic illness that is also in there.
Yeah.
In this opposition, Saturn is in your 12th house. That's mental health stuff too, and all the things that are more hidden, possibly even from yourself, that you don't know about yourself.
Yeah.
So Saturn is like, yeah, you want to do these things, but they are going to be really hard for you.
It's so fucking hard. It's like keeping up with the language, because when it goes, there's nothing I can do to like I mean, sometimes I can come back to it later, but if I'm like just not fucking feeling it, there mm-hmm. is nothing I can do to make myself like work on that language on a day that I just,
yeah.
And sometimes that day lasts for like 6 months or 5 years.
Yeah. And so the sixth and the 12th house obviously are opposite one another. So it's sort of this energy of whatever it is you have in your 12th house tends to interfere with your everyday life, with your routines. Mm-hmm. So having Saturn in there, and Saturn is in Virgo, no less. Mm-hmm. So it feels very strict and very limiting. Like Virgo puts like a whole nother level to Saturn's restrictions, right?
Yeah.
That's going to make it hard to stick to a routine.
Okay. That's a low down dirty trick, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of is. And then the second thing I immediately noticed is that you also have Pallas in your sixth house. She's not conjunct Mercury. They're too far away from each other for that, but they are in the same house. So they're neighbors, sort of, but they don't speak very often.
Okay.
This is the analogy that I like. They're like the kind of neighbors that you know exist, but you don't really talk to them.
Okay.
But Pallas is an asteroid. She is Athena. She is everything to do with the mind and learning and wisdom, specifically higher learning, and also war. She's also a goddess of war. Sure. She is also in Pisces. So she just puts like an emphasis on what Mercury is already doing in your chart. Athena is going like, more of that, please. More. We want that even more. So
yeah,
she's bringing in even more like of that need and longing for like foreign cultures and like study and that those emotions that you connect to that, like you want to really dive in deep, and you don't just want to learn the language. You also want to learn about the people that speak those languages and what is the culture, the movies, the books, the art, everything.
Oh yeah. I mean, I want to eat their food. I want to, everything.
That is Pallas's doing. But she is also still in opposition to your Saturn in your 12th house.
It's not fair.
So Saturn is telling both of those, it's not good. You can want all those things. I'm not going to make it easy for you, though.
Yeah, that's not nice. Okay.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Another interesting thing is Pallas is in a trine with your Uranus in your second house.
Okay.
So here we're getting to the part where I'm going to give you a little bit of advice, if you want to call it that, on how to deal with that stupid fucking Saturn interfering.
Yeah.
Uranus doesn't want to do anything in the way other people do them.
Correct, right.
So you will have a very hard time learning languages by going to a class or by sitting down and just trying to memorize vocabulary.
Yeah.
That is how other people do it. That's not how you're going to do it. So your approach of like watching movies in that language, maybe reading books or even news articles in that language, anything that where you would go like, nobody does that. Why would you do that? You have to learn the language first before you're able to do that. You should do those things.
Okay.
So yes, definitely watch movies in that language, read news articles, like maybe even follow like social media accounts in that language. I know you're only on TikTok when it comes to social media, but still.
That is fair though, because so one of the, not the only reason, but one of the reasons that I am furthest along in French is, so I have a lot of French friends and acquaintances.
Mm-hmm.
But like, so Justine, especially when I was still on Instagram, which I haven't been on Instagram for ages, mm-hmm. but she like moved back to France. And so they moved back to France. It's been so long since I've spoken to them. I cannot remember their pronouns. I'm pretty sure it's they, them, though, now that I think about it. But anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But so when they moved back to France, I started like super paying attention when they posted in French. And I would get really excited because I'd be like, I understood all of Justine's captions today. Because all of my other French friends post in English. But also, that's not super helpful because I don't think that any of them post on TikTok, which is now my only social media.
But yeah, but you could go. But
other people and, do.
Right. And find French creators or Spanish creators or whatever language it is that you want to focus on and follow them and immerse yourself in that. Another thing is Pallas has a sextile to your Venus in your eighth house, and Vesta is there too. But the important one is Venus here, because Venus is art and senses. And again, you said you want to immerse yourself in the entire culture. So any kind of works of art, any food, anything you can experience with your senses.
Yeah.
Is going to help you do that.
See, okay. So I also, this is a two-pronged thing because, as you know, I speak to my dog often in French and she hates it. She is like, I do not want to go on this language learning journey with you. I started learning German. So now I say no to her in like three languages. So every time I say no to her, I'm like, no, non, nein. She looks at me like, stop it. I'm not doing this. She got really mad when I started like throwing German at her. She's like, I wasn't happy with French, but I'm just kind of like, I'm sorry, I'm your mother. So you're on this journey with me. But anyway, one of the things that really annoyed her, but was really helpful is like, so often I'll watch television and like whatever language.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time I would just have like the subtitles on in whatever language. But then I made the move to like, especially with French, like it'll be verbally in French and then also have French subtitles. And so the last show that I was watching in French, I was like pausing it after every line and then like doing dramatic re-speakings, like like I was doing the lines back, but very dramatically. And Thea is just so long suffering. Like she hates it and she's really dramatic and she does these like huge dramatic sighs. And so I would like do it and she'd just be like,
oh, mother.
Anyway.
The ordeal.
Yeah,
this poor puppy has to go.
She's not into it. She's like a 1-year-old German Shepherd. She's sassy as fuck. She's not. Uh-huh. She does not want me to be like. She knows her commands in French, but she hates it. So she'll like super put it off. Anyway,
that's funny though.
I've obviously like got us going into the weeds now. So, but
that's,
anyway,
I mean that's just. Gonna happen.
Yeah. Yep.
So two more things.
Okay.
When it comes to language learning, right? Mm-hmm. So we've covered the routine of it and like the why you want to do it.
Yeah.
The other two spots I'm going to look at is the third house and the ninth house.
Okay. Can I ask one more thing about routines before we totally drop? So since my routines, so should I basically like not be trying to make myself have a routine with it, or?
You shouldn't.
I shouldn't. I should just be like, now I'm going to read. Oh, back to. So this podcast is going to make me really seem like a Twilight fan, because I am not. However, we already talked about Twilight on another episode, and then now I just realized that, like, one of my, like, I have a handful of books in French, which I bought for ease of being, like, ease of availability, but also things that would be easy to read.
Oh, yeah, Twilight's going to do that.
So I have Twilight, which is Fascination.
Uh-huh.
My pronunciation is a bit fucked there, but...
I mean, so I speak almost no French, so you're good.
You told me I speak German with a French accent.
You do. You do. That's weird. That's very funny.
Okay, anyways. Okay, I got it.
So here's my reasoning for that. Yes, Mercury and Pallas technically do want you to do that on a routinely basis because they are in your sixth house. But Saturn is just going, nuh-uh. And with that Uranus in there, with that trine with Uranus, like I said, Uranus does not want you to do things in the way that other people do them. And other people in general, obviously, not everyone, but in general, language learning is a thing that
right.
you do routinely. That is not, and also the Venus sextile. Yeah. Venus is also not a routine-based planet. Venus wants you to do shit when they feel good. And Uranus wants you to do stuff whenever. Like, no plan whatsoever. No, like, just, you know, go in whenever you feel like it.
Well, that part I have down.
See? So.
Right? Okay.
Okay, so now, third and ninth house. Just to recap, the third house is where communication is. So, obviously, we're going to look at that. And the ninth house is where foreign cultures, foreign languages are, and also higher study. So, also like lower study is also sort of in the third house. So like elementary school study.
Oh,
is like,
probably so, if I would have shut the fuck up, you would have just said that.
Yeah. So like. Basic learning, learning the basics of something is third house stuff. And then going beyond the basics is ninth house stuff. Ninth house is university study, like philosophies, worldview, like anything that is to do with stuff that's not basic anymore, right? So your basics, you have Neptune retrograde in your third house in Sagittarius. Why won't you click on it? Please click on it. Thank you. Yes, I speak to my computer. First of all, it's another one that is retrograde, and I think all of your outer planets are retrograde. So you have a lot of stuff that is very, very internalized and very, very separated from the outside world. You are very independent. You are very focused on yourself, and you don't really give a shit what other people think or how other people do stuff. You do them your way.
That's pretty accurate.
The vibe of basically all of those planets, right? Neptune is also that. So we're putting an emphasis on what Uranus is already telling you. Don't do it the way other people do it. don't focus on other people's advice except for mine.
Okay. No, I do listen to your advice.
That was a joke too.
I know.
But yeah, so other people will not understand how your brain works. That's why. Not because other people don't matter or you're an asshole or you're a mean person. It's just you are unique in the ways that you function. So whatever works for other people might work for you, but it might just as well not. So it makes more sense to just figure out your own way to do things, right?
Yeah.
And then Sagittarius is one of those signs that loves higher learning and foreign cultures. So it, again, it's not surprising that you want to learn these things because you have it in your third house of communication. You want to be able to communicate with all sorts of people all around the world. You are very interested in that and very curious and very, like, you have a lot of passion for that. Sagittarius is a fire sign. So it gets passionate about these things and very energized. And that also, so this is intuition speaking because I don't know this for a fact, but what this feels like is that whenever you get into a new language, when you get it into your head, oh, now this language would be cool to learn, it gives you this boost of energy. It's this, excitement and yay and all the things I could do with that. And like, you know, this that energizing feeling, that's Sagittarius.
Oh, sure. I mean, makes sense. Fully tracks. Yep.
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
And not only that, but Neptune is also in a trine with your Mars up in your 11th house. So 11th house is the house of community and friendship. You want to have community with other people through learning, you know, their language. And Mars is like highly energizing that. Mars is the one that wants to do everything and wants to do it quick and wants to do it passionately.
Yeah. So and I do have friends all over the world for sure.
Yeah, that tracks. That tracks. And you also have quite a bit of talent because Neptune also has a trine to your Jupiter, also in your 11th house. So it is there. It's not surprising that you want to do these things and you are capable of doing them, even though Saturn also has a square with Neptune. So again, Saturn is thrown in there and going like, but I'm going to make it hard. It's fine that you do all these things, but I'm just going to be an asshole about it and make things harder for you than they would have to be.
Yeah. Well, that's super irritating. Saturn, thanks.
That's what Saturn does.
So, normally, I don't get that angry with Saturn, but like, he's definitely doing me dirty on all of this.
Yeah, so. He does. And so the last thing is your ninth house up there. Your ninth house is in Gemini, which is very similar. It's the opposite sign of Sagittarius. They are very similar. Gemini is a little more ADHD than Sagittarius is. So Gemini just likes to start new things all the time and is really bad at finishing them.
Okay. Great.
And your ninth house is empty. So that doesn't mean that part of your life doesn't exist. It exists, but it doesn't have any kind of support either in the negative or the positive direction, right? It's just, it's there. It exists. No one really gives it any kind of energy except for that Gemini and like a little bit of Cancer up there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And Cancer is like the emotional part. So here's another piece of advice.
Okay.
We already covered the art part of it, right? You need to pull your Venus in there, right?
Yeah.
it might be helpful to also pull that Cancer in there. So go for emotions. So yep. Not just choose any kind of art. Choose the kind of art that will grab your emotions.
Twilight's going to be terrible for that. But I also have like a Buffy book.
See? Better? Better?
Way better? A handful of French books.
But, and when you go looking for creators, pick ones that, you know, you can connect with emotionally on some kind of level. Sure. Right? It doesn't have to be nice and easy. Like Cancer, like anything that goes deep, it can be positive, it can be negative.
Yeah.
So, those would be my two main pieces of advice I would give you. Art, don't listen to what other people do it and pull the emotions in there. Those were actually three pieces of advice, but we're going to ignore the fact that I cannot count.
Well, fantastic. So do you want to look at, so I know that I feel like Minerva is just a romanization of Athena, but there is separate.
I'm going to double check because I'm not sure, but I think so. Yeah.
She's got her own asteroid though, is my point. So maybe it'd be interesting to just see what is going on with that one.
I'm just going to double check.
You'd know more about that part.
Yeah. Sometimes I get confused with the Roman and Greek. Yes. She's Athena. Okay, good.
Okay. So I don't usually like super jive with the romanization of
me either.
Mythology. Right. But it is just, you know, in the idea of just having more information.
Okay, so we pulled the asteroid that is Minerva into your chart. Minerva is the Romanized version of Pallas Athena. And interestingly enough, she's opposite your Pallas in your 12th house. That's weird. That is fascinating. She is sort of conjunct your Saturn, although they are in different signs. Saturn is in Virgo. Minerva is already over in Libra. Yeah. So it's like a conjunction, you know?
Sure.
But they are in the same house. They are in the 12th house. That is interesting that. So I think I gave that analogy before several times, probably, of the tug of war, the push and pull that is the opposition. So it's like Pallas Athena, the Greek version of this deity, gives you all of these things that we've covered before. So yes, she definitely wants you to continue learning about different cultures and all these things. Mm-hmm. And then Minerva, the Romanized version of the same deity, is going like, I'm with Saturn over here though, and I'm going to make these things harder for you.
Right. Okay.
Which, I mean, that's an interesting kind of energy.
Yeah. Can I ask you a tiny mythology question?
Sure.
So when we're talking about like the Romanized version and the Greek version of these same deities, do the stories and the personality traits or whatever, are they sometimes a bit different depending on which?
Oh, yeah. So
what would be the difference between these two then?
So they are very similar usually, because basically the Romans went and just stole the entire pantheon from the Greeks and just went, we're liking that. We're just going to take that. But also, so when we look at the cultures of the Romans and the Greeks, the Romans were way more militarized than the Greeks were. The Romans then later also took on Christianity, right? So the Romans were very much a kind of culture that just took what they liked from other people and just integrated it into their own culture. Whereas the Greeks were a little more all over the place, a little more... yes, they certainly were in wars, obviously, but they weren't militarized in the way that the Romans were and like organized in that kind of way, in the way they did war, right? And obviously the Roman Empire was way bigger in the end than the Greek Empire ever was, right? So if we know that about the cultures is my point, then, you know, that obviously has an effect on how they view these deities. So when we come to Athena and Minerva, Athena is a way more, to me at least, people might disagree entirely with this, but in my experience and in my, I don't know, tapping into that energy, I guess. She is way more twofold. She has a bigger dichotomy. So she is wisdom and war in equal parts.
Right. Okay.
So yes, she is a very wise deity. She is very knowledgeable. She was literally born out of Zeus's head instead of a womb. So she is all about intellect and learning stuff, but she is about strategy in war just as much, and about like being very, very focused in your rage. She is not an angry deity necessarily, although she does get angry and she does smite people, but she's more organized in that, whereas Minerva barely has any kind of war aspects. Like those are she is very much a deity of wisdom, and like maybe there's like a little bit of war in there somewhere, hidden very deep.
Sure. But I mean, she's conjunct my Lilith, so that's funny that she is probably better for the men that I encounter, that it's like her instead of their way. Yeah.
There's we could have an entire discussion about why that is, because the Romans also took those war parts out of deities, out of the female deities. Christianity obviously did it even more so, but the Romans basically did the first step where, you know, obviously a woman cannot be a deity of war because it's a woman. So the woman will be the goddess of wisdom, and we're going to ignore the war part, right?
Right. Okay.
Because they were all dudes. And like, I'm not saying that the Greek society was equal. No, it wasn't. But it was not as bad as the Roman society. Like, women were fucked in the Roman society. So, so yeah, so that's the difference in that energy, right? So, Pallas is more in her feminine power, in her rage. It is incorporated into her being. It is not something that needs to be put aside or ignored or cut off in any way. Whereas in Minerva, it is. She is supposed to be wise and cannot be vengeful or angry or anything like that. At least not to the same degree, right?
Sure.
So that is interesting that they are in opposition in your chart. There's going to be, that's probably going to come up in other questions again, because there's a lot of symbolism in there.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I think it's funny that, like, she also has the same, like, You know, I can't remember if they were like trying or like whatever, but she has the same like good aspects with, you know, Uranus and Venus that we saw before. Yep. So it's just kind of like, yes, this again.
Yep. Yep. She has a trine to your Venus Vesta in your eighth house, and she has a sextile to Uranus, whereas Pallas has the other way around. So a trine to Uranus and a sextile to Venus Vesta. So it's very similar energy, but not exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
That is interesting. Okay.
I hope that was helpful at all.
It is. I think another thing that's like interesting about those answers is those are also probably the reasons that I have gotten farther with French than the other languages. So the other language that I am like, so like my number two farthest language is Spanish, which is kind of funny because here, anytime I like try to say anything in Spanish, they're like, oh, well, you speak Spanish with a Mexican American accent. And I'm like, yeah, there's a really great reason for that. Like,
maybe that's how, because that's how you learn Spanish.
Yeah. And like where I grew up, like there's so much Spanish being spoken around me that it's like, and everything that I miss about America is not about America, it's about Mexico. So with both of these, my point is, so I started to say that I basically learned the Spanish that I learned by osmosis, right? Because just like, but both of those are like, because I have like a deep emotional connection to Mexico and I have a deep emotional connection to France. And I've had like lots of friends from Mexico and lots of friends from France. And I've watched a bunch of like, I've indulged in a bunch of like art and food and culture for Mexico and for France, like more so than the other. So like, it's just interesting that you're like, these are the things. And I'm like, well, the two languages that I'm the farthest along with, you know, whereas like I did live in China, but it was actually because of my partner at the time. And it wasn't it wasn't really my idea to go there. Like I was happy to be there and like blah, blah, blah. But I didn't like connect with it in the same way. So that's just funny.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be harder to connect to the German culture because.
Okay, well, you say that because I have said the thing about German energy a lot, but German energy is not bad.
No, I know. But German culture is. That's my point.
I mean, doable. So if, okay.
Here I mean, is, if you were to immerse yourself in German food, it would bratwurst, beer, mashed potatoes.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? Oh, do I know? Kartoffeln? How do you say potatoes?
Kartoffeln.
Right. I wasn't that far off.
So lots of those.
Pretty terrible with German, but. Okay, I love a potato, and I actually really like the way that Germany does potatoes, because sometimes there's, like, the tanginess, and, like, German potato salad's, like, completely, like, a more, like, tart thing, and I like that, and whatever. But also, so I like this about Germany, but I also like this about France, so this is something that you guys have in common. In Britain and in America, you know, so when I'm at home in Scotland, I can't eat bread. Like gluten just fucks with me. And it fucks with me fucking hardcore. Like I can't you know, and I'm always like, maybe it'll be fine this time. It's not fine. It's never fine. Like, it's always really bad. But if I'm in Germany, I just eat bread. Every time I'm at your house, I'm just like,
all the bread.
It's fine. You know, and I can eat. So I can eat it in Germany and I can eat it in France. Which is funny. So anyway, so there's like, there's some connection.
There's parts that, and Germans love bread. Like, it's always weird to me when people talk about German cliches and they bring up beer and bratwurst, where I'm like, we're bread. Yeah. We love bread and potatoes. We're all about those two. Like, yes, a lot of Germans are really into beer. A lot of them really aren't, but every single German is into potatoes and bread specifically. There is no German that does not have an opinion about bread.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty accurate. I think, like, I'm just specific about what I jive with in Germany.
Fair.
But you could argue that with, like, pretty much every country. Like, nobody's going to be like, oh, do you know what? I completely love everything about this country.
Yeah, so that's true. I mean, if you do want to get back to speaking German, learning German, I speak it quite well.
I know.
Crack that joke every opportunity I get. I speak it fluently, actually, because it's the language, it's my mother tongue. So.
Muttersprechen? Or something like that?
Muttersprache. It's my Muttersprache.
I'm super bad at it. Okay. Great.
Okay. So, do you have a second question?
I do, and a third, but my second one is, so this is a really long episode because we're just talking about everything. So my next question is about, so we could literally use either of our charts for this, or you could just talk in vague terms, like literally whatever you want to do.
Okay.
But this question is about, if somebody has a chronic illness or anything really that like is quite energetically draining on the often, like what kinds of things would you look at in upcoming transits to be like kind of energy forecasts? Like, oh, I'm going to have fuck all energy because of this, or maybe I should do something that requires a little more energy because this transit's coming up.
I can just talk about that. I don't necessarily need to pull up a chart, but I have a good example for that with your chart that I can just explain, which is you right now and have had for quite a while Saturn in your sixth house in transits. Like, your natal Saturn is in your 12th house, but you have, which, so Saturn is one that I would look at with chronic illness. Anyway, like wherever Saturn is in your natal chart and also where Saturn is transiting, because Saturn is the planet of limitations and the things we have to overcome. And that's what chronic illness is. So I would always look at Saturn. And with your Saturn being natally in your 12th house, that's hidden stuff. So that is obviously going to be a chronic illness that is not going to be very apparent from the get-go. It's going to take time to figure out. It's a little bit hidden. And then when you have your transiting Saturn, first of all, in opposition with your natal Saturn, that's like a half Saturn return, which is going to be an important time in your life where you're going to have to deal with any kind of thing that is going to, that you're going to have to overcome. It's sort of like the mini version of the full Saturn return, which is when you're, when the transiting Saturn returns to the same spot that it is in your natal chart.
He is just determined to be a little bitch to me right now. And that's so irritating because normally I kind of stick up for Saturn and I'm almost kind of like, oh, it's not that bad. But like right now, just every time I turn around, you're like, that's because of Saturn. Like, yeah. Fuck Paul.
Yeah. And he's, so not only is he in opposition with your natal Saturn, he's also transiting through your sixth house, which is the house of obviously all the things we've talked about, but also the house of your physical body and your health, your physical health.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what I would look out for your sixth house when it comes to chronic illness, what's happening natally, what's happening transit wise in your sixth house. And whenever there's like a rougher planet like Saturn transiting through your sixth house, that's mm-hmm. going to tell me that you're probably going to go through some kind of flare up and, you know, chronic illness will be more prominent during those times. And once that transit is passed, it'll get a little easier. So
yeah,
basically those are the two important things. Where is Saturn in your chart? Natally, what is Saturn doing transit wise? And then what else is happening in your, specifically in your sixth house, both natally, but more so transit wise, because transits tell us, you know, what's happening when with your physical body, with your health. So, for example, if you have Mars transiting through your sixth house of health, you might deal more with fevers, with anything to do with heat, redness, so like rashes, anything like that, are very Marsian things. And also accidents. Mars is the planet of accidents, famously. So,
okay,
just be aware of those. That doesn't mean that every single person that has Mars transiting through their sixth house will have a fatal accident. It can mean simple things
that
like
would be rough because it's gonna
I mean it can and like there's really interesting studies about that on like people who got into car accidents while they had Mars in their sixth house or Mars in their first house of the person or whatever. So it is interesting to study that, but it can also be small things. So obviously when we look at these things, we try to look for the very literal, the very dramatic presentations of that, but it can literally just be that you will prick your finger while sewing.
Sure.
Or something like that, right? Sure. Because Mars is also very stabby. So anything stabby,
okay.
very Mars. So,
Okay. Well, I mean, I would like Saturn to get the fuck out of my sixth house, but I also know he's really slow moving, so he's probably going to be there for like.
Yeah. Depending on how large your houses are, it can take anywhere between like a year and 3 to 4 years for Saturn to fuck out of a house.
Mm-hmm.
So I think yours is already like at least past the halfway point. Yeah. So it's like it's not super long anymore, but you still have a little bit of.
Well, that's good. I'm fucking tired of his shit, but I know that it's like we're just stuck. We're stuck there for a little bit. So
yeah, and especially like obviously Saturn then also turns retrograde in there, so that slows everything down even more and internalizes things. And obviously you would also have to individually look at other aspects that both transiting Saturn and other transiting planets and also the natal planets would have. And so I keep repeating myself, but this is important to me. You always have to look at a person's individual chart. I can only give like very general ideas.
I wanted the general on that.
Yeah.
Because I know that it's going to be a lot of people. Like there's just so many people that are disabled or have chronic illness or whatever.
Yeah. And it does make sense to, if you know stuff about astrology and you have a chronic illness, to look at those transits, because they might give you a chance to be prepared and just know beforehand, oh, I'm probably going to have a flare up during this amount of time, whatever it is. And you can prepare for that. Ask your most trusted astrologer friend.
Well, and to be honest, I think that some more little lore about me is like for the last little over or less than a year, but like so back in last fall, I was like, yeah, right, I need to take like a year of fucking rest. And to me, a year is not really like 2025. A year to me is like fall to like the next spring, right? So like not just the winter, but like
it's over a year and a half, a year and a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I was like, oh, I need like a year of rest. And in my mind, I was like, right. So like March of 2026, I'll be done with this or whatever.
Yeah.
And I feel like I didn't remember that it was this, but I remember at that time you looking at my chart for something else and you were like, oh, it makes sense that you decided today that you need like a year of rest because this is the transit. And I think this was the transit.
Right? Yeah, this was the transit. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, it's great.
Yeah. Yay, chronic illness. It's so much fun. That was sarcasm, in case that wasn't clear.
I also, like, as I was saying, like, a year to me is the super weird, obscure period of time. And I'm like, yeah, only like a really specific, like, subset of neurodivergent people are going to understand that. Everybody else is going to be like, that is insane thinking.
Correct.
So anyway,
but you know,
that's fine,
the right people will understand. And also I feel like people who have chronic illnesses will understand, because being affected by the seasons and weather is a thing that we, at least to a certain degree, all know. I am the exact opposite from you. You need the heat to feel well. I need the cold to feel well. Heat makes me sicker.
So,
but that is why you want to go over a year plus the winter.
I want to be like spring. A year is like through both winters.
Yeah.
And then like, so I also like hate this thing where like the new year starts in January. Fucking nothing starts in January. Fuck off. That's stupid.
Yeah.
It's cold and dead.
Yeah.
We're not in a new year until we hit Aries season.
Yeah. That's what it was like for ages and ages and ages and ages until basically capitalism came along and made it like, oh, everybody has to work a 9-to-5 and like five days a week. So we're going to start the year randomly in the middle of winter.
It's nonsense. But anyways, that is why a year is so winter, year, and then it starts over and like it moves to the next one, the spring.
Yeah, that anyways, makes
if there's you, still gonna be a bunch of people going, that's crazy. But that's why.
Probably, but like if you are more in tune with, you know, living a natural cycle. Any kind of cycle that is more in tune with what nature is actually doing, then that will make sense to you. It does make sense to me. So
that's why you're my friend.
Yes. I get you.
You do.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
That totally answers. And it's probably kind of good that was like a bit of a shorter one, because the next one has the potential to be long.
Okay. So
because the next one is kind of a compare contrast thing. So basically I want to look at a chart with somebody who is like an ethics nerd. That's something that we share. We're both ethics nerds. We really like to like talk about ethics and we care about ethics and like, mm-hmm. And also we both of us really enjoy like thinking through really complex ethical situations.
Mm-hmm.
But also there is somebody who I know that's a piece of shit that we have their chart for.
Uh-huh.
They're criminally a bad person that cares nothing at all about ethics.
Uh-huh.
So I thought it would be interesting to look at a chart, like compare and contrast, like a high ethics and a no ethics chart.
Ooh.
And I also want to preface this by saying, I am aware that even someone with a very like difficult chart can learn and grow and stop like leaning into their like shadow whatever, but in the case of the person whose chart that we're like gonna use, like they think human trafficking is cool, so like that's what we're gonna look at.
Yeah.
Like, they're obviously like a shitty fucking person.
Yeah.
So
we have two people. So on this side, that's left. I had to think because I'm really bad with left and right. On the left side of the screen, we have my chart. It also has my name up there. That's how you can tell this is me. And then on the right side, we have the chart of a not so nice toxic person that we're not going to name because, you know, anonymity is important. So let's compare a few points. So the first interesting thing here to me is that both of these people have Saturn in their first house, right? So I have Saturn closely conjunct to my ascendant. The toxic person has Saturn closely conjunct to the cusp of the second house. So it's like the two ends of the first house, basically, but they're both in the first house. Looking aspect wise, what is Saturn actually doing and sign wise? So my Saturn is in Sagittarius. The other person's Saturn is in Libra. So what kind of vibe does this give Saturn? Sagittarius is quite the outgoing vibe, very curious, very interested in connection with other people, with different cultures, with learning about other people, very engaged, I want to say, with other people. Libra, also very engaged with other people, but in a completely different way. Libra is the sign that is the scales, and Libra people tend to have trouble making up their minds. They are very interested in justice, and there's an element of power in there too. So if this Saturn placement turns toxic, if the Libra Saturn turns toxic, it's going to be toxic specifically in relationships with other people and in how it has power over other people. It can get very manipulative, very pulling people in to then exert power over them. So being really charming on the get-go, being very emotionally connected, being very friendly. Libras tend to be really friendly people. But if it turns toxic, it uses that to then limit people, because Saturn, again, is the planet of limitations, to lock people in, to exert power over them, and keep them in enclosed spaces that can be physically, it can be metaphorically. Now, if my Saturn, and I hope that it hasn't turned toxic, but let's consider it would have, if a Sagittarius Saturn turns toxic, it would be manipulative, specifically with language. It would be very hurtful with words. So Sagittarius Saturn does not need to be physically violent or to be physically restricting people. It would do that just with words and saying the right things to make you question your entire personality and everything about you.
Apparently my dog has a lot to say about that.
Oh, I can't hear, so that's fine.
Oh, great.
But this is interesting because I know that I have those abilities and I know that I have used them in the past when I wasn't as healed as I am now, right? Yeah. So that tracks.
And the way that you explained the toxic side of Saturn in Libra, like that is how I would describe, like if I was explaining this person to somebody who didn't know them, like everybody listening to this, those are the traits that I would use to explain. Yeah. So it makes sense that their Saturn is in Libra in a toxic way in their first house, because like that's, as soon as I met them, I'm like, well, terrible, 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 terrible.
Yeah. And here's the thing. We all have the potential to either to go both ways, right? So if this person were to heal those parts of themselves, this could be a completely different vibe, like the complete opposite, right? Where they actually would have kind of a healing vibe for other people, to be friendly in a way that is not limiting, but that is freeing to others, right? Yep. So the other interesting thing is that the toxic person's Saturn has a sextile to their north node and a trine to their south node. Okay. Which so again, the nodes are the head and the tail of the dragon, which is a very metaphorical way to explain what those are. So they are not actual physical placements in the sky. I don't think I've explained that before. They are mathematical placements. So it gets very complicated. So I'm not actually going to explain how to calculate what they are.
You said math and I got bored. So
yeah. Fair. So they are connected to the sun and the moon, and how the sun and the moon are related to one another is the important thing to know about that. And then there's lots of maths about that. So they are not actual physical things in the sky. They are mathematical placements. They symbolize basically what we leave behind in our past lives. That is the south node. And what we do in this life, where we're supposed to grow towards to a certain degree, that is the north node. So that is the head of the dragon. So leaving behind, going towards. Now, interestingly, this person has a trine, which is the bigger, more important aspect, to the south node. So to the things that they actually are supposed to leave behind.
Yeah.
But those things have a somewhat bigger impact on them than the north node, which is what they're supposed to do in this life, what they are supposed to learn, grow, and do with this life, because the north node has a sextile, which is the smaller,
right,
less intense, less significant aspect.
So because it's like a stronger aspect to the south node, is that why it was apparently harder for them to move past what happened to them?
Yes. Yeah, that's going to make moving on, any kind of moving on, harder. You're going to cling more to, especially because it's Saturn, especially anything to do with limitations that are put on you or that you put on yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Those are going to be harder to move on to. And the South Node is down in the fifth house. So that specifically is anything to do with fun and games, children, and sexuality.
Right. Okay.
And then the North Node is in the 11th house, and that is the house of community. So technically, this means this person used to be in a past life very focused on just having fun, on just, you know, playing around, fucking around, being very playful and not serious about things. And that is fun. And that is, I'm not like putting any judgment on that.
No,
that's fine. At all. Like, that is completely fine if you do it in a, you know, healthy way that doesn't hurt people.
Yeah, I made the diversive sound because, like, those are the ways that they fuck with people.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. Right. So that is what they are supposed to leave behind in this life, though. And they are supposed to focus on community building, on friendship, on doing good. Like, the 11th house is also any kind of community work, any kind of volunteering, any kind of getting involved in making my environment better, right, is all in the 11th house. And that is what they were technically supposed to do.
I would say they're very involved in their community, but in trying to, like, hurt and damage and destroy their community. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Not really a cool vibe there.
Yeah, it's also, it gets more interesting because... So, and I will try to explain this in a concise way.
Okay.
So, I've mentioned before that houses have connections to zodiac signs, right? So every house is ruled by a certain zodiac sign. The fifth house is ruled by Leo.
Okay.
This person has Leo in their 11th house, though. So in the opposite house. And the other way around, the 11th house is ruled by Aquarius. This person has Aquarius in the fifth house, though.
Right.
So it's flipped. It's flipped around.
Yeah. So
they have the fun and games and fucking around fifth house, which has the South Node, which is the stuff that they should leave behind, but they have the accompanying sign for that in the 11th house.
Right.
So that's going to bring those fifth house things into the 11th house. And Leo is also the royal sign. It's the lion is the king of the jungle. Leos are the performers, the ones that want to be seen and recognized and adored. Admired, right? And the opposite of that, Aquarius are the ones that are more focused on, you know, communal stuff and being like connections are really important and all of those things. And this person having those two things flipped around is just really interesting, especially with the notes there. So that just feels all in all very confusing. And it feels like this person might have somewhat of an urge to build community and to be helpful and of service to others. But this entire constellation puts like confusion in there, because is that the past me, fifth house stuff, and like, am I just fucking around and exerting power over my community with the means of fun and games, sex, all of these things.
So here is something funny.
Mm-hmm.
I think that my north node, south node is in the same situation, is in the same house and the same signs mm-hmm. as this person's. So just out, just to throw that out there.
Let's see. Okay, first I'm going to have a look at what my situation is, right?
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. My south node, so what I'm leaving behind, is in my ninth house. So that is religion, worldview, higher learning, these things. Those are things, and it's in Libra. So that gives me lawyer vibes, like some sure. kind of lawyer that was like a civil rights lawyer or something like that. That's what I was in my past life, but that's not what I'm supposed to do in this life. My north node is in Aries in my third house, so it's this life is more about communication with people that are close to me. So it's the same ish vibe, but on a way smaller scale. Right?
Yeah.
So, and obviously these could, again, also be interpreted in the toxic way. So I could be pulling the South Node stuff into this life and be like, oh, but I want to be a religious leader and like become like really...
Like, I'm going to start a cult.
Yes. Yes. I was going to say and become like really cultist and... like controlling with these things, which I mean, yeah, I could probably do that. Don't want to though. So, let's see where your notes are. So this is your chart and you have mm-hmm. your north node in Leo in your 11th house. So almost exactly the same, like obviously the chart looks a little different. The houses are different sizes and blah, 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 but it's pretty much mm-hmm. the exact same. And your south node is in your fifth house in Aquarius. So that just tells me that basically when it comes to these things, at least you are the healed version of that other person. So if you were,
we have a lot that's not in common, but we have a lot of like surface level things that are in common. Like when I still was working, we were in a similar line of work. We knew a lot of the same people. Like as soon as I like met this, I didn't even technically like meet this person. Mm-hmm. We were just in the same community. And as soon as I saw them coming, I was like, no, thank you. Get away from me. And I ran and they kind of chased me. So in a weird way. So that's kind of funny. Anyway.
Yeah. It's interesting because then if we compare, you know, your Saturn with that person's Saturn, you have Saturn in the 12th house instead of the first house. So you don't, and also your Saturn is retrograde. So if you have any kind of urges to put limitations on anyone, it's on yourself.
Okay.
And not on other people because it's internalized, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, because of my childhood trauma and manipulative parents and blah, 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 I hate manipulation. So, like, if I'm doing anything, like, I would rather just not do something than do something that, like, might be construed as being manipulative.
Yeah.
And then if somebody... around me, and this is what happened with this person, if someone around me, if I see them with manipulative tendencies, mm-hmm. I just become a ghost. I either do not allow you to meet me, or I will just not fucking be in yeah. your space, because my pattern recognition is really good, and fuck you.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
That's so, cool. I want to look at Pluto next, because you have Pluto in your first and they have Pluto in the second. Okay. They're both in Libra though, which makes sense because you have a similar birth year yeah. and Pluto is very slow moving.
Generational.
But again, Pluto, your Pluto is retrograde. Their Pluto is not. Right?
Sure.
And
yeah.
It's in your first house. So when you exert power, Pluto is about death and power, right? It is upfront. It is you're not high. I mean, you could always turn these things toxic. That is always a possibility. But the tendency yeah. for you is more to exert power. A, over yourself, because it is retrograde, it is internalized, not so much exerting power over the outside world. And yeah. also, it's in your first house. So people will know what you're doing. It is sure. very in your face. It is very upfront. It is not yeah. secretly manipulating people into anything.
I'm a very direct person and I don't know how to not be.
yeah.
Probably stand being a little less direct, to be honest, but that's
fair.
I like it, it's fine, but I mean other people sometimes yeah. think that I could be a little less direct.
I also like it just fine, so
yeah, it's good.
So this other person's Pluto also in Libra but in the second house, so exerting power is a resource.
Oh, is it ever? Yep.
And that, again, can be very
specifically
positive.
Over women.
Yes, I was going to come to that. Yeah.
Okay, right.
So, it's a resource that can be, that can be a positive thing. That can mean that, you know how to lead people. You are a very good boss, for example, because you're good at, being in control. But if it turns yep. toxic, that is what you rely on. That is, you don't use any of your other resources. You rely on exerting power over other people. And that is how you make yourself feel good, feel powerful.
Yeah.
And also that is how you get things. That is literally how you make money. The second house is how we earn money. So you earn money by manipulating people into giving you money, basically.
Yeah, this person makes the bulk of their money off of manipulating women.
Yes. And that is interesting because their Pluto is sextile. Their natal Venus in the 12th house. Venus is in Leo. So, yes, it is power over women, but it is also power in relationships. Venus mm-hmm. is how we love, how we do romance. And it is mm-hmm. specifically financial power, because Venus is also rules our finances.
Of course.
So those are the three specific things that this person exerts power over, right? Mm-hmm. And because Venus is in the 12th house, it is not upfront. It is not in your face. It is not easily recognizable for other people. It is hidden and it is sneaky, which again could be done in a positive way. It could mean that you're, I don't know, a manager of people and you're in the back. You're not the one being in the forefront of attention, because Venus is also in Leo. So this could be a pop star manager, right? I'm in the back. I'm I have your back. I support you. And I'm, you know, the organized leader in the background while you shine in the spotlight and blah, blah, blah. This would be the positive version of this type of energy, right? So, so that's Pluto. already mentioned Venus. So Venus in the 12th house is, you know, very sneaky. This person's Venus has two squares with Uranus and with Chiron. So it's rebellion, it's quickness, it's the unexpected things, and it's trauma. So those relationships are connected to these things with that person. It's trauma and it's unexpected things, possibly accidents, anything like that. Right. So they probably are someone who's not very open in romantic relationships. Especially when it comes to communication, because Uranus is in their third house. They are not a good communicator. Again, this would be something, if this was a client, I would tell them, hey, you need to look out for that. And you need to make an effort to counter that by being extra, you know, extra aware that this is a trait that you have, and you know, you can counter that by communicating very well, by learning how to communicate. This is what the chart tells you is what you're supposed to do. Talk about your trauma, integrate it, you know. From what I know about this person, though, this is not what they've done. So
no, I mean, I feel like with every placement they have, they definitely could have made the opposite choice. Like, that's just how life works, right?
Yes, you exactly. Make
the best out of shit situations, but you have to decide to do that. You have to decide to put the effort into learning and growing and healing and doing the shadow work and like all of the stuff. But if you decide to be a shitty person, then...
That's the thing I feel is important to say. I cannot tell from just looking at a chart if a person is a toxic person or not, because there's no placements that will tell you, oh, this is a toxic person, because every single placement in your chart can turn toxic if you don't heal your shit, if you don't deal with your fucking trauma, and if you don't do shadow work,
of course, then
every single person can turn out to be toxic. And the other way around, every single placement in your chart, even the negative ones, the so-called negative ones, you can heal, you can deal with, you can turn around.
Yeah. Right?
So, yeah.
I think like a good example of that without having to like show anything. Mm-hmm. Is so a couple episodes back we were talking about how I have the muse for tragedy in the first house and how many death things I have in the first house, because there are many. But I also have what I call dead friend superpowers, right? Yeah. Where like I have lots of death trauma, like don't get me wrong, like I've really struggled with grief, but I've also like decided that I was going to learn good things from those. And so even though that's a really bad placement.
Yeah. On subject, looking at your Venus, your Venus is, I mean, she's happy in the sign that she's in. She's in Taurus. She rules Taurus. She likes it there. She's very comfortable. But she's squaring both of your nodes. She's opposite your Uranus. She is trine fucking Saturn. She is not happy.
Is this a dead partner placement? Because I have a lot of those too.
Yes. Yes. Because she's in your eighth house of death.
Yeah.
So there's both of those aspects that you just mentioned. Yes, you have dead partners and there's trauma, because your Chiron is also in your eighth house. There's trauma related to having partners die and death in general.
Yeah. Wouldn't recommend it.
No. But because it's in Taurus, and she in Venus feels very comfortable in Taurus, that aspect is in there also, getting comfortable with having that trauma, you know, vibing in that kind of energy, accepting that as a part of who you are and healing it and then using it for good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. And that's specifically the trine with Saturn, right? Saturn is like, oh, I'm fucking you up. I'm giving you so much bullshit in your life, but it's going to make you who you are. It's going to give you things that you can use for good specifically. Yeah. It's going to be hard. It's going to be traumatic. You're going to cry your fucking eyes out. Well, but ultimately, that is also the thing that will make you be good at the things you do and all the artsy things. Venus is art, like all the like Taurus is a very like homebody, a very comfortable sign, right? So you feel safe and comfortable in who you are because of these things.
Right? Truth. Yeah.
And again, could have turned out completely toxic.
Oh yeah, I'm sure the shadow side of that would have been rough.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yep.
Right. Okay.
One last placement I want to look at is Chiron. I've mentioned Chiron for both of you before. But specifically because this other person's Chiron. So Chiron is in the ninth house in Taurus, which very similar vibe to your Chiron, which is also in Taurus, but in the eighth house. Mm-hmm. So your trauma is about death, mostly. Their trauma is about religion and worldview. So I don't know if they have specific religious trauma.
I don't know, actually.
It might also...
I know a little bit about what their trauma is because I know somebody who's, you know, who has that information. And it didn't involve that, but that doesn't mean that's not in there.
Fair. But also their Chiron is in a sextile with their moon in their seventh house. Mm-hmm. So whatever their trauma is, what they do with it affects the way they do relationships, and specifically the emotional parts about relationships, the emotional connection with other people that they have. So again, this could be really healthy. It could mean that, hey, I learned from my trauma. I healed that trauma. I am now a very caring, nurturing person in my relationships because I know that trauma sucks and I try to take care of my partner and be very healing and comforting for them. Or if you go the toxic road, it could mean my trauma affected me, so I'm going to put my trauma on my partners. And I'm going to make my partners responsible for my trauma and how my trauma affects our relationship and our everyday life.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Chiron is also in a trine with their south node. So again, this is something that they've done.
Right.
Right. In the past, at least once. And they're not supposed to do it anymore. But
another go around at this.
Yes, it's another. They need another fucking lesson because they haven't learned it yet. Apparently, it's also opposition with their Uranus in the third house. So the communication again. So this could be positive in the way that, oh, you learn to communicate what your trauma is, and because it's Uranus, you're not going to do it in the typical sense. You're going to be a little rebellious about it. You're probably not going to go to therapy you're probably going to trauma dump on people. But if you have a close friend that you can do that with, yeah, then that can also be helpful and healing, right?
Yeah.
Or it can turn toxic and mean I'm going to use my trauma to manipulate others by, you know, talking about my trauma and going like, oh, I've gone through these horrible things and now you have to pity me and you have to do what I want and you have to do, you know, everything I tell you because poor me. Mm-hmm. I have suffered this trauma.
Right.
Right. And specifically that is in effect in relationships because Chiron is also in a square with their Venus. So in romantic relationships, anything to do with money and also specifically with women.
Yeah. I don't know. I hopefully this person in their, so they didn't learn it in their first Saturn return or up until now, but you know, maybe they'll learn to be a better person on their second Saturn return, or
it's possible
any of the opportunities that they have like, from now until, you know, they're off planet or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so possible.
I mean, I don't have a ton of hope, but everybody has the opportunity to learn and change and grow.
Yes. So that is what any listener or viewer should take away from this.
Yeah.
Just because you have difficult placements in your chart doesn't make you a bad person. It can, every single placement can go either way. You cannot tell if someone is healed or not. You can tell where the wound is and what is supposed to be healed. You can tell that from a chart, but whether or not the person actually does the work, that's not in a chart. That is fucking free will. Like,
sure.
That's on every single person to decide and to put the work in. That's not going to be in the chart.
Right. And I think another interesting thing just to mention, and I don't want to like go looking for it or whatever, but just because I know this is a conversation we had about this person's chart in the past, is I remember one time we were looking at their chart and you were like, they have the opportunity to be really powerful in a really like healing way and this way, this way, and this way.
Mm-hmm.
But also because I think because of transits and other things that were going on, you were like, but I can see that they're actually really disempowered in those ways because they're not doing like, because they're doing the thing and it just sucks the power like out of it. So I just think it's like, I would never want anybody to like hear anything that we say and go like, oh no, I'm gonna be I'm fucked or like
no, not whatever, at all,
because it can always be either side.
Yes, that, and also, and I repeat myself, you have to look at the entire chart of a person.
Yeah, of course.
Right. So yeah, the part that was very healing and nurturing is the moon in this person's chart. They have the moon in the seventh house. And it's a trine, their Uranus in the third, and sextile their Chiron in the ninth. So yes, there is this potential to be really nurturing, really caring, specifically for people very close to them. So that is romantic relationships, but also very close friends, very close family members, close colleagues, anything like that.
Sure.
To be really healing for that for these people around them because of that Chiron thing, that Chiron sextile. So they have that potential.
Sure.
But again, you can have potentials and not use them.
Yeah.
So that is on you. It is on every single person. Each of us, we need to make the decision to actually use the potential that we have.
Yeah, for sure.
Or let it wither and die.
Yep.
Basically.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Does that that answer your question?
Yeah, I think that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like, so that kind of thing is like extra fascinating to me, right?
Yeah.
Is like looking at the different ways that a chart can play out and like,
yeah,
you know, looking at that one particularly, like going like, yeah, oh, this person's really interested in ethics, right?
Yeah.
Because I will talk through ethical situations that I'm not even a part of. I'm like, let me help you out. Well, I'm like, let me help you figure out what would be the most ethical way for you to like, navigate.
Yeah. You're my, among other things, my ethics friend. So whenever I have an ethical situation where I'm like, I'm not sure how to do this, you're the person I go to. And then we have big discussions about how this should be handled and why it should be handled like that and what is the nuance and all the things.
Same. I have like a handful of, well, at this point, it's mostly you or so a lot of times I'll talk to you and Alex and go, I want both of these people's opinions to help me figure out like what is the best thing. And sometimes it's fucking hypothetical because I love it.
Yeah. Same.
Right. Same. So I think it's really interesting. And the person whose chart we were just looking at could give a fuck. So I just think it's interesting sometimes to look at like the thank you.
That was fascinating.
I don't know if we had like a super long
time. Oh, this is gonna be a longer episode, but I feel like, you know, it's going to be fine. But what I do want to say is this is why it's important that when you're in a consultation with an astrologer, it's a conversation. So, because the astrologer is not going to know, is this part of you healed? Is it not? Is this something you still have to work on? The astrologer can give you tendencies and potentials and, you know, what this might represent. And then it's on you, the client, to go like, oh, this is how this presents in my life. And then the astrologer can go deeper into that. And so, a consultation should always be a conversation. Don't expect your astrologer to be like all knowing and give you every single thing a placement can represent. That is humanly impossible.
So, sure. Yeah, sure. Good to remember.
So
hopefully this was like a good mix of questions again. I try to like do that as best I can.
I think so. This was fun.
It was.
Okay, so
it was.
We hope you, dear listener, viewer, whatever, also enjoyed listening or watching.
At some point we're going to get better at the intros and outros, because I think right now we're terrible at both of those things.
Yes, we are. We are embracing the unprofessionalness, that's a word now.
It just kind of is what it is for now, but we're gonna get better.
Yeah.
Rate, review, subscribe, I guess.
Yes.
The things. Whatever.
Yes, do all the things. And we hope you liked it. And we will see and hear you next time, hopefully.
Okay, bye.
Bye.